Hello, and welcome to the Sunshine Sound Podcast with your host, Christine Mathias.
And so many people have bad associations with the holidays, and so, you know, we play these sort of snarky songs about Christmas that don't necessarily paint the holidays in a good light or family in a good light or anything. And a lot of people feel like, oh, thank goodness you're finally saying what we can't say for ourselves. And so it's kind of nice to be a part of all of that and to make people who don't like Christmas enjoy it at least for a couple minutes.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to episode number 4 of the Sunshine Sound Podcast. We are moving right along. So one of the things that I love about this podcast is that I get to meet up with all these really amazing people that I've met since I've been in San Diego. Because it's like, we put on these events and we play these shows, but sometimes it's hard to stay connected and build any relationships beyond those shows. So this podcast has been a really cool opportunity for me to reconnect with these people that I haven't seen in months or longer. So today's show, our guests are Joe and Jay McCaskill of Pony Death Ride. So I met these two at the Music Video Extravaganza, same place where I met Moans. That was one of the events that Sunshine Sound Center put on. And they are so fun. They are this half-Canadian musical comedy duo based here in San Diego. And they interweave elements of old-time burlesque and comedy with punk. And they have tons of style. So today's episode is all about their experience here in the music scene and the burlesque scene, the role of comedy in music, their awesome holiday shows, their cats, their inspiration, and a lot more. So, Joe and Jay, welcome to the studio. And I see in all your descriptions that you're proudly half Canadian. So where does that come from?
I'm Canadian. I was born in Canada. My family's originally from the States. But it comes in handy being a Canadian. I don't know about so much about down here if you get any kind of cachet, but if in Canada they have these Canadian content laws when it comes to radio programming and other arts and culture stuff. So if you are a Canadian media outlet, you have to have a certain percentage of Canadian content, CanCon. And it's a marketing thing for us, because if we say half Canadian, then hopefully the Canadian radio stations are like, oh, here's someone who can help us fill our quota.
Oh, interesting. I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought it was a funny thing to say.
No, it's a quota.
Say we're both a quarter Canadian. That's how we got half.
That's what I was wondering, how the proportion added up. Yeah. So how did you two start playing together?
Well, we were both in separate rock bands when we first met. And eventually, it was kind of a weird thing. Our various we started swapping band members, mainly Joe's. The people from Joe's band started coming over to my band, and then eventually those bands kind of petered out, and then we were left with each other.
And what were those other bands different from what Pony Death Ride is now?
My band was somewhat similar. I wrote most of the songs. There was a couple of us that wrote the songs, but kind of the same, not musically, you know, topically the same stuff. Just goofy, but musically a lot different. And I'd never even played the ukulele. And I was just like, why don't we start a band and I'll learn how to play the ukulele. And Jay played all these other instruments. And so it really kind of changed from what our first ideas of the band was going to be. I mean, it's completely different than any idea we ever had. But yeah, we you know, our bands would gig together and then we just kind of met that way. Like I saw her play one night, and I was like, hey, who's that bass player up there? And then the next night, she happened to be at a place where my band was playing, so we just kind of hung out from there.
It was very weird coincidence. But Joe's band, they were called Trophy Wife, and they were a really, really funny alt-country-ish rock band, and I like them instantly. And then you were asking, you know, how are they different from Pony Death Threat? The band that I was in was, like, I would say probably one of the loudest, most bombastic rock bands in San Diego at the time. So it's like completely the opposite. So,
cool. What was that band?
We were called Nautical Disaster. We didn't get a whole lot of traction. We released a lot of albums, but that was the main focus. But it was fun. It's always fun while it lasts, and then you gotta, and then it's not fun. And
so, what was the plan for Pony Death Ride from the beginning?
We didn't have a plan.
Yeah,
just to start writing songs. I think at one point we were going to play to drum tracks. Like we had the guy who recorded our album, Mike Camus. We were just going to use his drum tracks, and we were going to play bass and guitar. And that just we did that once, and it just didn't make sense. We kept turning around to, you know, cue the drummer, and he was an iPod, so it just seemed goofy. But then we just started playing focusing on playing burlesque shows and comedy shows, you know, no drummer needed, you know, just, you know, a couple instruments, and that seemed to be what we were getting booked for and what we were trying to get booked for. And you know, you go up, you do three songs, and then you're done, as opposed to, you know, 2 hours, and, you know, we're not 20, so,
sure.
You know, we just started doing that. You know, we still write those types of songs and record those types of songs, and we're actually playing in a month from now, so it's going to be the first time we've had a drummer with us on stage in about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting.
Yeah, where's that show going to be?
The Casbah.
Oh, nice.
With Bitmaps and some other bands I don't know that are probably really good.
Nice.
I just remember.
I've heard of Bitmaps.
Have you?
Yeah.
Cool.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
And the Expats, who are coming all the way from Tucson. They're like a father-daughter duo. And that's kind of why we try to book this show, is we knew we could get them on the bill and get them to San Diego and people can hear them because they're really good.
Fun, yeah. So when you guys have played other shows like the burlesque shows, it's just the two of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so how did you get involved in that?
That's a super long story. Going back, well, a long time. But I've been involved with the burlesque world for many years, since I was in grad school, over 10 years ago. And I'm involved with a place called the Burlesque Hall of Fame, which is in Las Vegas. We just opened a brand new museum there. We've had temporary locations on and off for about 10, 12 years. And I'm a museum person. Mm. I went to school for museums, and I like museums and artifacts and stuff. So when I was in grad school, I found out about this place called the Exotic World Burlesque Museum. Started helping them out. That's what eventually became the Burlesque Hall of Fame. And so just in that whole scene, there's a lot of new burlesque performers, and just this whole sort of international counterculture movement of women at the time when I first started getting into this. And now it's kind of expanded, and there's men as well that are doing burlesque these days. But so when the rock bands came to their conclusions, and I figured if I was going to keep playing music, I wanted to do it in the burlesque vaudeville variety scene. It's a little bit more age appropriate, and it's a diverse crowd, but you know, you can only sort of pull off the rock thing for so long. If you're not famous, people are not going to keep coming out to see you when you're in your mid 40s and you're playing, you know, you're playing a tiny bar in OB on a Tuesday night. So we figured the burlesque scene, we knew a lot of people. There's a lot of comedy in that whole crowd. So we just sort of tried to figure out something that was influenced by old burlesque and vaudeville, but had a contemporary feeling to it and something that would not require carrying amplifiers and heavy instruments. So now we just carry kazoos and penny whistles and all kind of stuff instead of big heavy amps.
Oh, so fun. Yeah. So when you perform at those shows, is it like what do they look like? Are there like other people performing at the same time as you guys, or is it like you have your short set and then it goes on to the next act?
Yeah, we have we're just usually in with the, you know, it's just us, like we'll get a song or two or three. Sometimes we open up the show as the musical act. Cool. But it's, you know, doing it in front of like a burlesque or comedy crowd, you know, it's, everybody's pretty attentive and you certain phrases you're trying to get across or certain words that, you know, you, when you wrote the song, you thought were funny, people are actually catching on to that. Whereas, you know, being in a band, you know, in a bar, no one's really catching the nuances of that. So it's nice to be able to have an audience understand. And kind of what came along with that is, you know, when we said, great, let's do this old-timey burlesque thing, we didn't know how to play that type of music. And we still don't. But, you know, it's like, oh, well, I got to learn how that style, you know, how do you even write like that? And, you know, you keep trying to revert back to your, you know, rock band stuff where it's these... You know, you play these certain chords and it's like, no, you got to get out of, you know, get that out of your head and learn how to do stuff in a, like a burlesque-y vaudeville style. But then you have to, and we never really thought of it at the beginning, was you almost have to be an actor. And so when you say a line, you have to portray it in a certain way. And so we're still learning how to do that. And I can't remember what your original question was, but I'm not sure it had anything to do.
She's
I drive a Volvo. Is that what are we?
how the shows kind of go. And so the shows, every producer kind of runs their show a little bit differently. We play a lot of burlesque shows up in LA, but we also play them down here in San Diego. Sometimes we're the opening act and then the main show follows. Sometimes we're integrated. Occasionally we're the MCs. We've at least on one occasion we've performed while a stripper was dancing up in Portland. We've used human props for some of our sort of narrative songs. We have a song about child beauty pageants, so we've had a burlesque performer come on stage and pretend to be our daughter. But then. With these shows, sometimes they're straight burlesque, so it's just, you know, female striptease acts. But then other times the shows are more diverse, so we'll perform with people like sword swallowers and contortionists and all kinds of crazy
people
stuff.
People with chickens, just defrosted chickens.
Yeah, we lost the Hollywood Burlesque Festival best variety category to a dead plucked chicken from the grocery store.
But how can you compete with that?
I know. I mean, it was a great dancer. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that's oh, that's funny. Do you think that burlesque has made kind of a comeback recently, or is it like has it been around this whole time, or is it just that I'm hearing about it more now?
It definitely has made a big comeback. It never really went away, but the heydays of burlesque sort of peaked in the 1950s, and then 60s. People got into more of the raunchy stuff, so real burlesque kind of wasn't a thing anymore. But throughout the decades, there's always strip teasers. And so, you know, there's always these women who work in these gentlemen's clubs, who are not like the other strippers who are pulling off these like really weird antiquated acts. So it's these women who have kind of kept the spirit of old time burlesque alive. And then in the late 90s, the sort of post-punk rock scene, a lot of the women discovered burlesque and started recreating that and doing kind of a retro thing, but adding their own kind of spin to it. And from the late 90s on, it's just sort of continued to gain momentum as a movement. It had a really strong kind of feminist feeling during that period, but now it's become much more mainstream. So, you know, you've got the Las Vegas shows and everything. But there's so much variety within burlesque that there's almost something for everyone. I mean, obviously, if you just don't like it, you don't like it.
Sure.
But within burlesque, there's lots of other subgenres.
Yeah, and it's interesting how I definitely detect that there's like this female empowerment component to it. Do you feel that way as well?
I do and I don't, you know, as time has gone on, like everyone, I just have become kind of jaded, but, you know, burlesque is interesting because it changes form over the years. And having been involved with the Burlesque Museum, I've seen now different phases coming in. And what I find really interesting about the sort of the new burlesque scene is it's kind of a LGBT crowd. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting as well. And it's also becoming more racially diverse. Mm-hmm. It's always been somewhat racially diverse, but I think the past few years has seen a lot of performers from a lot of different backgrounds. So it's neat. It's always changing. From one year to the next, it's going to be a new kind of burlesque, depending on how the youngsters are interpreting it and making it their own.
Sure. And has comedy always been a component of burlesque?
Yeah, it has definitely always been a major part of burlesque. I mean, I don't want to get too nerdy here, but you know, the earliest roots of burlesque. The earliest roots of burlesque are like the mid-1800s. And so it started out with there never used to be female actors. It was always just male actors portraying female parts. So then the females started, you know, said, "Hey, I want to get on stage." So they started playing male characters, and the hilariousness ensued. And and so that it started like that, and then the men came back and brought in their kind of own brand of comedy. And it just sort of evolved. The current burlesque scene is much more focused on the striptease. So, but there are a lot of people like Joe and I who are doing a, sort of a subset variety type of thing. And we really kind of have to elbow our way in and insert ourselves and remind people, hey, there's more to burlesque than just taking off your clothes.
Sure. Yeah. And I love that comedy is such a big part of your of Pony Death Ride. I think that sometimes musicians take themselves a little too seriously.
Yeah.
And so, like, from the beginning, did you want this to be a kind of a fun and comedic act?
Yeah, definitely. It was, you know, it's funny. We want to do funny songs, but it's hard to write them because you don't want to cross the line into, you know, absurd or predictable or stuff like that. So it's, people think, you know, they don't realize the intricacies of writing these types of songs.
Yeah,
and, you know, like one song will be like 10 pages in a songbook, you know, and you're really trying to get, you know, this line right or this song, you know, right. But it's definitely fun to do it. And, you know, when you're singing it live and you've spent a lot of time on the songs and the crowd reacts, and then, you know, if the song hasn't been recorded yet, you know, depending on how a crowd reacts, you change the song and it develops over, you know, over time. And then by the time you record it, you really have kind of the best version of, you know, what people have reacted to. And definitely it's nice to write funny songs. It's one of those things where you could be washing dishes and you get this idea and you're like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have a song about this?
Yeah,
you know. And then Jay's kind of the, you know, like, well, no, that's not gonna work and we can't do that, where I'm just like, well, what about this crazy idea? So she kind of keeps it all.
I'm the bad cop.
She's the bad cop. You know, but you know, you don't want to offend anybody, but at the same time, you know, you're probably going to offend some people.
Sure.
But, you know, it's not, you know, I don't know. I don't think we're just keeping it fun.
Yeah.
And it's fun to play and it's fun to do shows and it's fun to have people laugh. I couldn't imagine at, you know, my age, being up on stage playing some serious song, you know, like what, you know.
Joe's funny even when he sleeps. He just can't not inflect humor into things. So
comes from a deep sadness,
right? Yeah. Honestly, like all comedians, we're just tortured souls.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's such a true. You know, I read a lot of books about comedians, and it's really some of the stuff you read. It's like, my God, what a you know, no wonder you're up on stage telling jokes. You know, it's either that or you would have, you know, offed yourself. You know, like, wow.
If you're not laughing, then you're crying.
Yeah, exactly.
The world is too serious, and you got to let off some steam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's nice to know that we can do shows where people can laugh, or have a good time, or, you know, whatever. It's nice to be able to do that.
Right.
You know, we could sit down and write a love song, and it would sound so stupid, I'm sure. I've never even tried, but, you know.
We have funny love songs.
We do. We have some great love songs.
Yeah. And so your, I think it was your last album that's all about your cats. Yeah.
Not specifically our cats, just cats in general.
But yeah. Definitely our cats were the muses.
Sure.
Yeah.
The inspiration.
Yeah. The first song started with our cats chasing each other around. And, you know, I always have my ukulele in my hand. So a song ensued, and then somehow another song got written about cats, and it's like, hey, let's do a whole album about cats and then make costumes that are cat costumes. Like, at one point, it's like, what are we doing?
People love cats, so it was a highly calculated marketing thing, much like the Canadian, half Canadian thing.
Yeah, we figured, you know, there's probably, you know, 100 million people with cats in this country, and if 10% of them bought albums, we'd sell 10 million records. It hasn't worked like that.
Not yet.
But, you know, probably all this swearing. Probably all that type. You know, they like cats, but they don't like the swearing. So, you know.
All right. So let's take a moment to listen to one of those tracks from your cat album. So this one is called, let's see. Your cats are crap.
Have we ever said we think you're cool? Not just because you have a pool. To friends like you, we will propose a toast. Your taste in wine is exquisite. You bring flowers when you visit. We love everything about you, almost. It really hurts us so, but there's something you should know.
Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
They're total crap.
What's up with the attitude? They're stinky and they're rude. Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
And that's a fact.
Believe us when we tell you. We don't mean to bring you down. Your cats do nothing but lay around, making some kind of loud meowing sound.
Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
Your cats are crap.
And that's a fact.
What's up with the attitude? They're stinky and they're rude. Your cats are crap.
Learn how to act.
They should be smacked.
They have no tact.
We thought you should know.
Everybody hates you and you're bad people.
Oh no, that's not it. It's just not all cats are created equal. You know, some are less than perfect, and you know, you have like five of those interior cats.
You do.
We know it's terrible to say your cats are unbearable, and apparently the fur is wearable, cause it's all over my clothes. It's like the shedding never ends, and we're regretting being your friends. Your cats are bad, and everybody knows. And your dog's a jerk as well.
And we're back. That was a great track. Thank you.
That was fun.
Yeah.
That song, surprising, we've played it live, I think, once. Is it once we've played it? Didn't go over very well. People were confused.
Why do you think they were confused?
I don't know. I don't
know. Where did we play it?
I think we played it in Los Angeles. Did we play it at Faye Dodo? At the it was at the Weird Al tribute show.
They're really? Probably like, Weird Al tribute show?
A Weird Al burlesque tribute show.
Oh my
show.
God.
Burlesque that's, tribute
that
to Weird Al.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. Right.
So were there strip teases to Weird Al songs? Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Amazing. Yeah. Costumes, themes. I mean, really, the burlesque performers went way over and it was awesome. It was really cool.
It's either, what I've learned is, either you're like, okay with Weird Al, or you're totally freaking into Weird Al.
I love Weird Al.
Okay, because, he has, it's like an all or nothing thing. Yeah. So I had no idea.
It's an Al or nothing thing.
Oh, that's great. So who writes the lyrics for these songs? Do you write them together? How does that look?
I write most of them, and then I'll take it to Jay and say, what about this? Or she'll change a line here or there. And I think she has more of a songwriting, what's the word?
I don't know because I don't agree.
this fits, or, this doesn't fit, or, well, it would make more sense if this syllable was here.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's pretty intricate. It's not throwing comedy out there. We're fitting it into.
But I'm really not a songwriter. So I can come in and kind of, do a few tweaks at the end. But.
Yeah. And which I'm totally open to.
Sure.
Surprisingly, yeah. And so, I mean, I don't know where the things come from, mm-hmm. Where the ideas, it's odd. That's why we get a lot of weird songs.
Yeah.
Like, I do arts and crafts better than most kids, songs like that. Because I was probably literally thinking, I do arts and crafts better than most kids. And then I started snapping my fingers, and then it's a song.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, it's like we all have these ideas and thoughts that cross our minds, but it's like, which ones do you decide to make a song out of? That's
right.
Yeah.
The ones you can rhyme, I guess.
I guess so.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe just, all day, basically, Joe is just stream of consciousness. Songs are coming out of him. And so every now and then I'll just say, that one, that'll be our next song. And that's how Tom Waits' Christmas came about. And a lot of the other songs were just things that he was just, just hanging out, fooling around, and suddenly a new song is born.
Mm-hmm. So Christmas seems to be a big thing with you guys too, huh? Do you have some like Christmas shows, and you're really into the holidays?
Really, really into the holidays.
It's twofold. One, it was a great way for us to actually celebrate holidays. Mm-hmm. And be in different places, like being in Denver at Christmas time and places that we normally wouldn't be. And same thing, like spreading Christmas cheer to people that want to hear these messed up Christmas songs. But at the same time, getting away from family, I think, was a big, on both sides. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, what can we do to not be around these people at this time of year? Like,
some good
let's
thinking.
Tour, yeah. you know. Uh-huh. When the crappy weather is happening, and but it's we've done it what 4 or 5 years now.
I think more than that. I think we've officially lost track. Mm-hmm. But we kind of have unusual family dynamics. We don't have that like idyllic sort of on either side family scenarios. Although mm-hmm. Joe's family is very nice, and and so it was kind of like, we've got all this sort of time on our hands around the holidays, and there are certain things that we don't want to do or be around for, so let's figure out a way that we can get out of town and get out of these obligations, and it just evolved into something really awesome. Like, it's so fun to be a part of the celebration, not just be celebrating, but to actually be the party. And so many people have bad associations with the mm-hmm. holidays. And so, we play these sort of snarky songs about Christmas that don't necessarily paint the holidays in a good light or family in a good light or anything. And a lot of people feel like, oh, thank goodness, you're finally saying what we can't say for ourselves. And so it's kind of nice to to be a part of all of that and to make people who don't like Christmas enjoy it at least for a couple minutes or even longer if they remember our songs and they can stay laughing through the holidays and, you know, say, yeah, this is my family. They're
That was very nice. That was very, very well put. It was,
thank you.
Yeah, you took kind of what I started and really turned it into a Norman Rockwell type thing. No, it's so fun because every year we try to write and record a new Christmas song. This year it was Tom Waits Christmas and another one. It's a dirty title, so I don't want to say it.
No, you can say it.
There's just too many dicks here at Christmas.
I forgot and, about that.
You know, and Christmas songs are different. You write them in 2 minutes and people love them, you know, and it's so... It's so fun to play for that crowd and people really kind of get behind that. You know, we have our Christmas costumes, you know, we'll bring, you know, Jay has this crazy Christmas hair.
I got a new Christmas themed headdress that arrived on December 23rd of this past year after months of preparation. But
And this year we got to do some dates with Elvez and his band. So that was really cool. Like we played pretty decent sized venues and in decent crowds, sized crowds, and they were all great. So that was a really neat experience.
So
now it's more of a show than just playing Christmas songs. We try to turn it into, you know, there's some, not skits, but you know, we do, there's some talking and there's some crowd participation and there's things like that. So
fun.
Yeah.
So where are those shows usually? Are they like at bars or where do they happen?
Anywhere where they'll book us.
Yeah.
Mostly, I think all of the ones this year were bars. I don't think we were in any theaters. Occasionally we play theaters. But yeah, like the Elbow Room in San Francisco, we played a really nice big nightclub called The Ritz in San Jose. And we played the little Casbah here in San Diego.
The Echo in Los Angeles. So we try to at least go up the coast. Like we've gone all the way up to Seattle and we've gone... all the way out to Denver.
Okay.
So
you do go to the snow.
You
brave the snow.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because a couple of years ago, we were in Bisbee, Arizona, and I've never been where snow was falling. So that was first time because I'm from San Diego and, you know, it's just
does it snow in Bisbee? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so there we were driving and I was freaking out like, you know, like a five-year-old, you know, like, wow. Snow and it was so, you know, if we weren't touring, I wouldn't have seen that, you know, it was so nice. And then, you know, you get to see that and you play a show and you're the, you know.
Well, all, you know, every town decorates for the holidays almost. So when you're traveling around that time of year, you get to see, you know, what that town has to offer for holiday decorations. And so it's really neat to go to Santa Fe and see how they decorate and Bisbee and Tucson. And you know, when we were in San Jose this year, we went and walked around the square where they have like hundreds of Christmas trees decorated. So it's very intensive Christmas.
Actually enjoy the holidays once again. It's nice. Yeah, it was an unexpected bonus, but it's nice.
Yeah. Do you think you'll take it any further, like go all the way out to the East Coast?
Yeah, sure.
I'd love to.
When the, you know, the time rolls around when we start booking the shows, we start booking them in August.
Sure.
So it's 100 degrees outside. We're talking about Christmas shows and, you know, but, you know, depending on how much, you know, how well we're doing financially, you know, we'll, you know, book further away places. And yeah, it'd be great to go all the way out to the East Coast.
Yeah. That's such a great idea because you have all year to plan for it and it's like can be your thing. And I don't think a lot of people are doing that. So It's cool.
That's what was nice about doing the tour with Elvez is that he has his Christmas show and he has a whole themed show. So to be able to join him on that, you know, like two different bands doing these, you know, themed shows was really cool.
And he's kind of the inspiration for us doing our holiday show because we've been friends with him for quite a while. And so he's been doing the Christmas show forever, the Merry Mexmas. So we kind of stole that from him, but you know, lots of people have done Christmas shows in the past. So he didn't own it.
I stole it from Dean Martin.
Well, exactly.
Inspired by. Right. That's how I like
Donnie and Marie, you know, Carol Burnett, all those people had Christmas shows.
Sure.
So we incorporate some of that music. Like we have, you know, our intro music is from like Bing Crosby, you know, from the 40s. And we just put our names in the song, like, and tonight, you know, Bony Death Ride, you
know. So. Yeah. But to circle back, we would like to play the East Coast. So anyone listening, please get in touch.
It's not too early.
It's not too early. We're totally open to doing private parties of any size. And we would really like to go East. So if anyone wants to invite us.
Sure.
Yeah, we'd love to do holiday parties at people's houses. That would be it. You know, it hasn't worked out yet, but hopefully that's something we'll get into.
Cool.
Yeah. I'd love to have us at our party.
We should have a party.
We should. Yeah. Who's going to pay us, though?
All right, so let's take another break and listen to one of your Christmas songs. You sent me that A Tom Waits Christmas. Let's have a listen.
Red suit. Red hat.
What's a guy like you doing out here in the cold on Christmas Eve?
Well,
I never talk to strangers, anyway.
Well, I ain't such a bad guy once you get to know me. On the corner of Fifth and Squire, one-legged midget bear for a dollar. At least there's a way for us to spend our Christmas Eve. Somewhere they're singing peace on earth. Somewhere they're celebrating Jesus' birth. Here they're celebrating Christmas with two hookers and a midget playing pool. And the Christmas tree's on fire and no one seems to care. It's a Tom Waits Christmas. Coors Lies and Napoleon, a dirty pizza box. Son of a bitch, but eggnog and whiskey on the rocks. The champagne for my real friends. Real pain for my sham friends. Burn that light, hang from the bar. Christmas tree on the piano, an empty tip jar. The piano player's in the alley and he's trying to bum a smoke. But the telephone's out of cigarettes. And the Christmas tree's on fire. And no one seems to care. It's a Tom Waits Christmas. Santa Claus is drunk in the ski room on Christmas Eve. He dropped his trolls and stuck at his fat ass. We all raise the glass. Stop me if you've heard this one. There's a hooker holding a suitcase next to Mr. Watson. In the alley behind an old beat up 55, as I step outside, wrap my lips around the smoke I bummed from Loretta, a former circus performer who's now a one-handed prostitute who gave a one-hand job to a dirty ventriloquist who's dressed in a tuxedo with a red rose on the lapel, and he's talking to his good friend Frankie Walnuts about his favorite monkey paw salad. And
now tell me, you think I'm really gonna fall for that old line?
If I may ask which line you're referring to, per se, I said a lot of stuff in there. Anyway, what was I? Well, you'll see without fortune down on the Fleetwood next to a paperboy with a broken back and a wooden leg leaning up against the light post next to a Lincoln full of the Mexicans. And I never could stand that dog. And the prostitute's on fire and no one seems to care. To Tom Waits, Tom Waits, Tom. Christmas. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1.
Mm-hmm.
great.
The song seems shorter than it.
I know, right?
I remembered.
So another thing that I really love about your band is you have such a cool look. Like, how did that come together? Is that you,
genetics.
Jay?
What do you think?
Well, yeah, that was the burlesque influence.
Sure.
And, you know, even as a rock musician, I always believe that people should dress up, you know, if you're on stage. And maybe that comes from earlier musical activities, because I was like a high school band student and, you know, mm-hmm. we always had to dress up every time we performed. But yeah, that was definitely a prerequisite of Pony Death Ride, was that I insisted that we had to have matching costumes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I was like, no way, we're not going to do this. We'll play the songs, but we're not going to, you know,
he
and 2 weeks later, I'm at Michael's like, oh, what about these rhinestones? Kind of made sense, you know.
Nice. So do you make your, or at least bedazzle your own costumes, or where did they come from?
It's a combination. We have a friend, Angel Compton, who has made 3 of my dresses. And so, yeah, I sort of used to try to cobble together my own kind of costumes, but I've never learned to sew. So, you know, we reached a certain level where I needed to have a professional step in. Mm-hmm. And then Joe's stuff, a combination of Angel has made Joe at least one shirt, and we've bought him some really snazzy jackets in the men's clothing district in Los Angeles, downtown LA.
Cool.
There's a lot of flashy men's clothing in there. So.
It's next to the Pinata District. there really is a Pinata
really?
District.
There's a hilarious.
Yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah. So it sounds like you have spent some time in LA as well. Yeah. Like, how do you feel like the scene in San Diego compares to what it's like in LA?
Is anyone from San Diego going to be listening to this?
LA, there's shows everywhere and anywhere. I mean, on any given night, you know, if we lived up there, we would play so much more. Like, there's shows that ask us to play, but just the travel and expense is, you know, can get tough. But
sure.
we try to make it up there a few times a year. And the venues usually are pretty nice. Mm. And the people kind of gear their shows toward variety shows, so we absolutely fit in. Whereas San Diego, unless we hook up with a burlesque show or, you know, maybe some touring band, we happen to hook on to their show. Really, LA just has so many more opportunities. And, you know, they really push their shows and they advertise them and they get coverage for their shows. And, you know, they're pretty neat. Yeah.
It's the entertainment capital of the world, I've heard it called.
Yeah. And,
and so, I mean, that's a big difference, because people up in LA generally just, you know, entertaining is their life. That's how they've ended up in Los Angeles, is because they have this dream of being a famous dancer or actor or musician or comedian or whatever. So there's just so much talent. And these, you know, these people who produce the shows, most of them are involved in other entertainment pursuits as well. So it's just, it's a very, very highly skilled, honed group of people up there. And so, you know, not to knock San Diego, but
That's
San
right.
Diego is just not an entertainment mecca. We have
right.
we have a lot of talented people here, but it's not their primary focus in their lives. And then also, because LA is just geared towards entertainment, there's a lot more venues or places that are just willing to make themselves be a venue, whereas in San Diego, there's just not that mentality down here.
Yeah,
so it's
yeah.
hard to get places to book burlesque shows or any kind of variety shows, because they just don't know about it. It's a foreign animal to them.
Sure.
So we like going up to LA. It's the big city. And, you know, for me, I've lived in California 15 years. And so I still feel like a tourist when I go up there. I mean, it's for me, it's all just...
It's a different world. Yeah.
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 But it's nice to perform with somebody and then you see him on Conan 2 days later.
Sure.
And this other person is in this commercial or that commercial. Not that that's a goal of ours, but it's nice that, you know, we're performing in shows with people that have really honed their talent. And, you know, it definitely makes us, you know, step up our game when we're doing shows up there.
We've performed shows in LA and then gone back to our hotel room and turned on the TV, and there's people that we just performed with who are in commercials or it's really neat.
Is it harder to book shows in LA? Is it with all the competition?
I don't even feel like we really know that many people, but you know, if we could get a show this weekend pretty much if we wanted to. Yeah. I mean, there's enough people doing shows that they're trying to get more people to their show because it's so spread out. There's so many shows and, you know, they're always looking for people.
Yeah. But there are a few shows that are pretty insidery and cliquey that we have yet to get access to, which is
we've tried for years.
Variety shows or burlesque shows?
Comedy shows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like Kirsten Schaal from Last Man on Earth. Mm-hmm. She has at the Virgil in LA, like every Monday, her and a friend do this show where they have comedians come. And some people we've known have performed there. And I've been trying to get into that show for like 5 years now.
Oh, wow.
So every year I write, you know, a new email. Hey, we're still playing. We're still doing that. Here's a few more places we've played. And then it's always, you know.
One day.
We'll just stand outside and play if we have to one day, you know.
Yeah. The Upright Citizens Brigade is, you know, another one of those places that's really hard to get into. And a lot of, you know, there are a lot of stars associated with that theater, like people like Amy Poehler, I think, you know, big names. And they also offer improv classes and stuff. So it's also kind of an insider thing, but it's definitely a mecca for most comedians to play there. And so a few years ago, you know, they called us, I think, on a Monday and said, can you come up and fill a slot on a Wednesday? And we were there in a second.
Cool.
Yeah, so, you know, when we get a last-minute call from L.A., we'll do anything we can to get into some of these shows, because otherwise they'll never let us perform. So
we'll be in LA in a week. We'll be auditioning for the Gong Show, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, right. They brought that back.
Right.
Huh?
Yeah.
They did.
It's an interesting reaction, because some people we said, yeah, we're going to audition for the Gong Show, and they've never heard of it before. So it's, I think if you're maybe under 30, I'm not too sure.
But I think I know it because it was like mentioned on like Family Guy or something. Yeah. It's still in the like cultural.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So
we've performed with a lot of people that have done the Gong Show. So we'll see. They ask us. We'll see what happens. You know, we get 2 minutes to dazzle them. And,
2 minutes.
You know.
Wow.
it's one of those things they... you know, it's the Gong Show is not necessarily a jumping off point to other things. So it's sort of a thing within itself.
Sure.
And it's like, I don't know, do we want to get on this show just so they can gong us and tell us how bad we are? But, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, well, if we don't go, then we'll never be able to talk about it. So
they audition people before they put them on the show.
Up their act and they do all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
So did you have to, what was the process like to get to the audition? Was it like one of those just like get in line and
they
wait
just,
all day, or did you contact them?
No, they just sent us an email.
Oh, they contacted you.
Yeah. They said, oh, we saw your video online and, you know, do you want to come audition? And
oh, wow.
Yeah, sure.
They're always looking for people.
Yeah. Sure. What's not. Yeah, we're not special because they want us. I think they ask everybody.
Yeah.
Like if there's a guy walking down the street smoking a cigarette, they're like, "Hey, we like that act."
Mm. We were out like a week or so ago with some friends of ours, a burlesque producer and her husband's this juggler, and then their friends were there and they're like fire spinners, and we're like, hey guys, guess what, we got asked to audition for the Gong Show, and everyone there had their own Gong Show story.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
really?
Oh, well, when I was on the gun, when I, you know, it's like, oh, so, you know, if you're in a certain crowd,
really put you in your, they really put us in our place.
Oh man. That's fun. So when are you guys
I think
auditioning?
That's next Tuesday.
Okay.
Something like that.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
We got asked to audition for America's Got Talent as well a couple years ago out of the blue. So we kind of learned some stuff about Hollywood back when that happened. So
and ourselves.
Apparently, they just, you know, they need a lot of people to fill their quotas. So
gotcha. Yeah. And did you do that audition?
We did. Yeah.
That's so bad.
What was that like?
Well, it was at the convention center, which is massive, and
here in San Diego.
Yeah. And so it was pretty exciting. And for the first part, they gave us VIP treatment. That's what they called it. Mm. And they hand escorted us all over the convention center and made us feel like really special. And then we finally did our minute and a half in front of the panel, and then all the magic just kind of faded away. Then for some reason they dragged us out to the furthest point from the convention center out by the water to ostensibly take some photos or something, forgot about us. And then, and that was kind of the end of it. After all the other people left, we're like, wait a minute, what about our photos?
We went from, being walked, from with the guy with the walkie talkie and a clipboard, walked to the producer's room, to standing in the middle of the grass, not knowing what happened.
I know.
How bad were we we're standing in a field? We can't even see the
Beyonce impersonator.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. It was very comical.
It was humbling.
So, yeah. So we didn't get on the show that time. No,
we're
wiser.
We don't have any. We don't have any clean songs, so it's not like we're gonna. Hmm. Sing some, they're all dirty. We can't, we can't even change them up enough to make them clean or make them make sense. So,
Yeah.
And we'll never write one either.
Exactly.
No, maybe we will.
Yeah. You're too cool for network.
No. No, we're not at all. Don't say that.
I think we're more cable.
Are we more Netflix than?
Yeah, you're more.
Somewhere.
Netflix.
See, this is a song. This is how the songs happen.
With a little bit of cable access thrown in.
Yeah. So what's next for Pony Death Ride?
Well, we ought to record a new album at some point.
Sure.
As a cat lover, it's kind of a bit of a come down, and to not be doing another album about cats. It's hard to get quite as
I know.
But but we're gonna make an album eventually. We have a few songs recorded, and just getting ready for this show at the Casbah. Like Joe was saying, we haven't done a rock show in a really long time.
That's exciting.
I barely remember how to play bass, so I got to relearn the bass.
Okay, so you don't play bass when you're just doing the duo stuff.
When we record, we do.
Okay.
That's the magic of recording is I spend a few days learning a song, come in, record it, and never play it again, but it has this immortal quality. So we'll be relearning rock music for our upcoming show and getting ready for the gong show thing, maybe get my hair cut or something.
Cool.
What else are we doing? And let's see, it's March, so... Actually, it's almost April, so in 3 months, we'll probably start getting ready for Christmas.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, really?
No, we have a ton of songs that I've written that we just haven't had time to sit down and learn. So we said when the year, when the year ended last year, okay, great.
Yeah.
Christmas is over. Now we're going to learn all these new songs. I think we've learned one.
Okay.
But then stuff comes up and, then you're like, oh, well, let's do this or let's, write this other song and let's do this. And so we kind of got distracted from that a little bit, but hopefully we'll start learning those and have enough to record. We just record here and there.
Sure.
We're both real estate agents. Mm. So if we sell a house, we have money to record a song. Yeah. So that's basically how it works. If we're going to ever tour, or not even just at Christmas, but maybe in the summer we're going to do a few shows somewhere. It depends on if we sell houses or, so it's all,
Sure. Yeah. Do you think you'll do another music video?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are fun. Yeah. We have a guy that does them for us, Jeff Forrest, who's he's a he records a lot of bands as well at Double Time Studio. He just started getting into doing videos, so I think we were one of the first. Mm-hmm. But we already have, there's a song we have called Drum Circle, and we're gonna go down to OB and record a video of us. For some reason, on like Wednesday nights, they have these drum circles with hundreds of people. So we're gonna go stand in the middle of that and record the song that's, kind of trashing drum circles.
Sure.
Not trashing them as much as bringing to light the horrid nature of them. But and we're gonna stand in the middle and see what happens. So I don't know, maybe we'll get beat down. I don't know. Who knows?
Oh, but, fun.
Videos are fun. I mean, I wish we knew how to do them on our own.
Yeah.
You know, every song would have a video, but, mm-hmm. you know.
Cool. All right. So thanks for coming by today. That was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thanks to you. Yeah. Thanks for finding us.
Thanks again for listening to the Sunshine Sound Podcast. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can check us out at sunshinesoundcenter.org for older episodes. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook and things. And if you want to contact me, feel free to shoot me an email at christine@sunshinesoundcenter.org. That's all I got for you today. So I'll talk to you later. Have a good one.